Now, question for you. What happens when you get a diagnosis of something you really don't want? I mean, there are lots and lots of diagnoses you can get from doctors and hospitals for various different things. But the really, really troublesome one, and the one that worries most people, is a diagnosis for cancer, leukemia, or other forms of cancer. Not good news. It never is good news and tends to be a shock to the system. Well, one person who got such a diagnosis is Josh Hillier, and he's on the end of the line now. Morning, Josh.
Morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. This was a shock to you, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could say that. It certainly was a shock. Just shy of 2 years ago now. A shock indeed. A bolt out of the blue, if you will. A very short lead up, a very short. I wasn't symptomatic for very long. It was during the pandemic, and a doctor literally came to me, looked me square in the eye, and changed my life forever when he said, "You've got leukemia."
You had no idea this was coming?
No idea whatsoever. It was right in the midst of the pandemic. I just started a new job, and jobs were in the balance for not just for me, for everyone, as I'm sure we can all remember. And
yeah.
I was so hell-bent on keeping that job. I think a few bits I can look back on now and say, well, maybe you should have put this and that together. But no, sincerely, a total bolt out of the blue. I started feeling a little bit ill on a Monday. And by the Thursday, we said, all right, it's time to call an ambulance. And
It was that quick?
Yeah, it was that quick. It really was that quick. It was. Mm-hmm. I'd had a COVID test the week before for a hiatus hernia in my chest prior to going to a appointment for that, because obviously you needed the COVID test before. Tested positive, had a week off work, tested negative on the Sunday. On the Monday, I started feeling ill, so I thought, all right, I'll take a couple of days off. But they wasn't COVID symptoms. It was intense dizziness alongside my heart racing to a degree which I struggle to describe. The way I described it to doctors was Eminem couldn't get on a microphone and rap quicker than what my heart was going. Seriously, it was something.
You need a sense of humour with this, I think, don't you?
Yeah, well, of course, you've got to have a sense of humour or you're not going to get anywhere. Go on.
I was going to say, so, I mean, you got this diagnosis and like most people, they're completely unaware that this is what's coming down the line at them. Yours was a diagnosis of acute lymphoblastic pneumonia, leukemia, I think is that about right?
One. Yep. That's the one. Yeah.
Not a nice thing. And of course, leukemia is it's a cancer of the blood, isn't it, really, which is a affected by things like bone marrow and stuff like that. I mean, I'm none too au fait with all of the symptoms of it, but it's seriously life-threatening. And of course, I know that many of the many cancer treatments these days are successful, and there are many more survivors of cancer than there ever used to be, such is the age of technology that we live in. But it's still one of those things that when you get it, you always think the worst first, don't you?
Initially, yes, of course. When I was very, very first told, I mean, I was taken to East Surrey. They took a pot of bloods, walked off. A doctor come back and took another pot of bloods 5 minutes later. I'm still oblivious to what's going on. I don't, you know, I wasn't really thinking about it. And then got taken to a side room. And a doctor walked in, bold as brass, exactly how you'd want to be told, looked me square in the eye and just said, it's bad news, you've got leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, off the bat, yeah, I had one hell of a panic attack. It is everybody's worst fear. I remember thinking it before I was pre-diagnosed. And then after that, I had the initial night in East Surrey, but I thought to myself, obviously, they've let my mum come up and whatnot, and I thought, if they walk in the morning and say you can't beat it, then it's game, set, and match. If they say there's a chance that you can beat it, I'm beating this. There's no second.
Okay.
There's no second way about it.
So let's take this conversation with the specialist a bit further. All right, the consultant, just a little bit further. When he gave you this diagnosis, did he give you any indication of what your chances were of survival? Because, I mean, survival rates are different for different cancers, aren't they? What sort of survival rate did he give you?
So, initially, at East Surrey, no. I wasn't told of my survival rate. Two doctors walked in the morning and began to talk. And I stopped them because I said, look, listen, can I beat this or not? That's all I wanted to know. I didn't care about anything else. Am I going to live or am I going to go?
Yeah.
And they said it's difficult, but you can. But the percentages and the survival rates came when I was transferred to the Royal Marsden in Sutton, who I can't speak highly enough, a couple of days later. They told me it wasn't good. At one point, I was told you've got a 75% chance, a 60 to 75% chance of being here in 5 years' time. But they used a lot of finesse because they didn't tell me how bad it was initially. I was 95% plus bone marrow leukemia and 89% blood leukemia. Now, a lot of people don't get that far.
Yeah.
You know, that's you know, I was absolutely smothered in it. So in the days building up, when I had the dizziness and the heart racing, that's because I was about to go. You know, it was a long way down the line. We had to do a lot of tests. I would have had to have found a stem cell donor, which I did. And in that respect, was a miracle. My brother was living in Cambodia at the time, and they say the best people to chance it with are your siblings at first. He flew back in and was the first person we tested. And you could be a percentage of a match, so you could be like a 10% match, a 20% match, or not a match at all. And I was very, very fortunate in the way that my brother was 100% match. So that changed my percentages drastically, because at first, it wasn't good. It didn't look like I was about to survive. Because we were that far along with it. I mean, East Surrey gave me a pot of chemotherapy the morning they walked in. So that's how bad it was. But I think what the Royal Marsden done was started getting the ball rolling, and then they sort of told me how bad it was a little bit later down the line, if you will, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But at first I was given a very low chance of survival. The one that poked into my head was 60% of being here in 5 years' time. But that was a long time ago. And your percentage had changed. As soon as my brother's 100% stem cell match, and I know that after I've had all the chemotherapy and had to go for a stem cell transplant, it changes your percentages. But I'll be completely honest, I didn't press them on percentages and things as such.
You've got to keep an upbeat face on all of this. I'm guessing that, mums being mums, your mum probably was a little more panicky about this than you.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone was an awful lot panickier than I was. I was taken to a room at the Royal Marsden in Sutton and locked in that room for 5 weeks. I wasn't, because I was just... Obviously, I had the COVID and everything, and then I was...
Yeah, immunosuppressed as well, weren't you?
Pardon?
You'd be immunosuppressed at that point as well, yeah, I would guess. Yeah, of course.
But it was such an initial shock, because when I think back to it now, I think, like, as we said, that doctor at East Surrey just walked in and just said to me, you've got leukemia. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any initial tests. I didn't go to bed. I didn't find a lump or think I'm ill and go to bed for 2 or 3 weeks thinking, oh, this could be cancer, this could be the end, this is bad. I was just backed into a corner. And then it was just like, well, what are you going to do? I'm not just going to roll over and let this beat me, am I? I've got a life to live. I'd literally just turned 30. So I just got in there. I was in the room and I set myself a set of principles early doors that I still abide by today. I tell myself the same sort of things. And that's helped get me through it. And I've maintained a relentlessly upbeat attitude to it all, because sincerely... There's nothing to be afraid of. Like, you know, when you're born, no one comes to you and says, oh, you'll be all right, you won't get cancer, you're not going to get hit by a bus tomorrow or something like that. Everybody's life pans out differently, and my life panned out that now I've got a big fight on my hand to survive, and you better get ready for it. So get ready for it is exactly what I did. And I told the doctors early doors, very respectfully, and they respected it massively. I said, look, they're coming in, as you can imagine, I've had all forms of tests, etc. And they came in and were telling me all this information about my diagnosis, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. And I just said, look, at the end of the day, right, I know you have to give me this information, and I appreciate that you do. But to me, what you're telling me is absolutely irrelevant. I don't care about what it's called. I don't care about what it does. All I want to know is, what are we doing next? Let's go. What do you want me to do? Because let's go and do it. How do we get out of this? Don't worry about the about giving me all the ins and the outs and the rest of it. Because
it's always handy though, Josh. It is. I mean, to be fair, it is always handy to know quite what's going to happen, because it leads. What we've been talking about is actually getting that initial diagnosis. But following that, of course, you get the treatment, which is where the real stuff actually happens, and some of it, I'm guessing, it being leukemia and it involving bone marrow, I'm guessing probably was quite painful.
Yeah, don't listen. I'm not sugarcoating it. It's been brutal, absolutely brutal. You wouldn't wish it on anyone. I pray with every fibre of my being that I don't have to go through and do it again. You know, it's been horrific. But at the same time, it's just had to have been done. I've told myself in my head, you've got to get ill to get better. So when it was hitting me hard and all the rest of it, I tell myself the same things in my head, know that I have to be like this in order to get better. And I am getting substantially better now. But I've never worried about it, and I've never let it affect me. And having now coming out of it, I'm sort of still in the thick of things whilst feeling better. And speaking to other people that have got cancer and different diagnoses and stuff, people really seem to struggle and become scared of it. And I can't say that's something that happened to me, because I was just ready to go. Like I said, it doesn't matter what it's called, and it doesn't matter what the side effects are. It really doesn't. You've just got to deal with it. What are you going to do about it? You going to change them? Do you see what I mean? Are you going to swerve it? Are you going to say, going to go home and say, I'm not going to do that chemo, I can't be bothered? Because it's going to save your life. You're doing it whether you like it or not. So whether you like it or not, you better just maintain an upbeat attitude and be ready to go. Because if you went into it with any other attitude, you'd get beat. If I went into this with a negative attitude, trust me, what I've been through, thinking, oh, poor me, this is going to be horrible, and all the rest of it, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now.
No, well, it all ties in with what you said earlier, that when you're talking about the doctors and them trying to explain to you about some of this stuff, and you're saying, no. In some ways, I get that probably helped you get through what you've just described as hell.
Yeah.
And if you'd have known what was actually involved and how painful it would have been, possibly you may have gone at that with a different attitude, which is, I'm sure the attitude you've got is probably the thing that's got you through this. So it's 2 years now. Where are you at now?
Right now, I'm still taking an awful lot of pills every day. I take between 30 and 40 pills every day. I have what's known as ECP treatment every other Thursday and Friday, which is essentially, after the stem cell transplant, I contracted what's known as GVHD disease. And it's where my brother's stem cells are trying to graft into mine, and it can cause you all sorts of rashes and loads of different side effects. But it's a very positive treatment that I have done, and it makes you feel a lot better. And I'm just trying to get my life back together. A couple of months ago, within the space of a month, I had two major head surgeries. I had sepsis creep in through a Hickman line in my chest, and they had to operate, they had to slice into my neck and my wrist whilst I was awake. They sort of wrapped me in this blue cellophane thing and took me to an intensive care unit. And they sliced into my neck and pulled all the veins around, and the same with my wrist. And then after that, the inflammation caused by the trauma to my neck caused a abscess behind the back of my head. So I've got a cracking looking scar from that, where that was drained, and I was in surgery for 10 days there. But then I've come out of that the other side as well, and I'm now sitting here on the sofa talking to you and trying to put things back together. And I'm feeling all right at the moment, and that is down to a relentlessly positive attitude. There's many key factors that have got me to this point where I am now. And one of them is just maintaining an attitude where you're not going to get beat, and you know you just have to do exactly what the doctors say. And not be scared. And that's what I want to press on to people, because, as I said, from talking to other people, I use my social media a lot, and I have done from the beginning, to document my story, document my journey, and I've had a lot of love and support from it. And as well as the love and support, I've had people reach out and who are in similar situations, not even just cancer-riddled situations, you know, to have got other problems in their life and say, how do you do it and whatnot. So what I felt is I've got the ability to help people here. I know that I have. So if I can reach out and start helping people, even if it's just one person, then it's job done for me. And secondly, it's good for me to be talking about it because it has been deeply traumatic, and it's time to start channeling and digesting that into the right direction, because absolutely nobody's going to go through this and what I've been through and just say, oh, well, that's done. We'll forget about that then.
Doesn't sound like it's the sort of thing that you can just shrug off in a couple of minutes, really. And it's always, always inspiring to listen to someone who's been through the kind of thing that you've been through to help others who may be just getting the awful diagnosis that, you've got leukemia. Are you... you're at the other side of the treatment now. Do you have... are you likely to ever be clear of this, or is it something you're going to have to learn to live with regular treatments?
They told me initially you can get the all clear in about 7 years.
Oh, you've got a way to go then.
So I've got a way to go, but I'm in remission as of right now.
Yeah.
Like I say, I'm still taking loads of pills for various things.
Yeah.
I'm still having various treatments. I still have... When I have my ECP treatment, I still go in for transfusions via like platelets and blood transfusions and whatnot. So I'm still doing the treatment. I'm still getting out of the water, if you will. There's a chemotherapy named ponatinib, which is just a pill.
Yeah.
Now they tell me this is the active. I took it all the way through my initial 5 bouts of chemotherapy.
Yeah.
They tell me this is a very active pill, and it's a maintenance kill to keep it at bay. And they started that after the stem cell transplant, you're supposed to have a 3-month washout and start again. But I had to have a 7-month washout because the stem cell transplant was just so utterly brutal. And once I did start the pill again, it immediately upset my liver. So having spoken to my consultant a few weeks ago, who's a very, very top consultant, her opinion as of now was... Right now, I just don't want to do it to you because you've been through too much.
Mm.
And we'll have a look in December. And if you are to start it, we'll start you on a low dose every other day. And that'll be for 2 years. So there's a potential. There's still a potential of 2 years of chemotherapy.
You're an ongoing work in progress, then, is probably the best way to describe it. Now, the one thing I know you're doing, you've talked very passionately today about all this stuff. I know that you're trying to put together a podcast, aren't you?
Yeah.
Tell us very quickly about that, because we're running short of time. But tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's very much at the early stage. I've been speaking. I reached out on my Instagram and got a lot of responses, Instagram, Facebook and all the rest of it, and got a lot of responses from people, a lot of help, a lot of ideas. I've been speaking to Leukemia UK, who are going to help push this along. I've sent them lots of content, and I think they've got a production team, so on and so forth. So that's something that's certainly in the pipeline. It's going to be called Living with Leukemia, and it's going to tell the whole story. Like I say, we've had a short amount of time here, we've just sort of touched bases. And there's key factors that I want to talk about, that I want to discuss. To tell my story initially what's happened to me, and there's other aspects of treatments that I want to discuss and get out there alongside helping other people. You know, I've got a couple of thousand followers on Instagram, which is obviously nothing. But when I reach out on Instagram, I get an awful lot of reactions and an awful lot of love and an awful lot of interest. So if I can broaden that horizon in way of a podcast that's been supported and is done properly, then we can start helping loads of people. And that's what you've got to do. If you've got cancer in any way, shape or form, right, you are part of a club that nobody wants to be in.
Mm.
So it's best that we help and support each other in any which way we can.
Well,
and I'll say that to... I'd like to throw that out to everyone, anybody that needs any sort of help. It's just a chat.
Are you on Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah, my Instagram is HilliaJosh9.
HilliaJosh9, so you can search you out on Instagram. You're on Facebook and
I'm on Facebook.
Twitter.
Facebook is just a personal account, Josh Hillier, but by all means...
Yeah, just search out Josh Hillier, and then, yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. Josh, it's been a joy talking to you today.
Thank you, Tony, for having me on. I'm always
bowled over by anybody that's been through the sorts of things that you've been through. So I take my hat off to you as an inspiration, really. Good luck with the podcast.
Thank you.
Hopefully... You can come back again at some point and you can talk some more about it. But for now, Josh Hillier, thank you.
Cheers, Tony.